On today's Bill of the Fleda Show, episode 245, Nimitushipa, The Bluebird, Lowell, and I'm Sorry. All of this and more.
The Fleda Show, starring Kenty and Melly the Cockatiel.
Welcome to the Fleda Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage from my diet. Welcome to the Fleda Show. I am Kenty, your host, and my co-host, Millie the Cockatiel. Welcome you to another week of the Fleda Show. Melly, in fact, is very quiet this week because she has laid an egg and she's sitting on it, hoping it will hatch. Well, I haven't broken the news to her that it will never hatch. You'd think she'd get the idea by now, you know. So how are you doing, kids? It's a little rainy today, which is kind of nice. You know, it's the end of summer and, you know, it's the end of summer. That's basically what it is. And that's what happens, because when it comes into fall time, it gets a little rainy and the leaves fall. And, you know, that's why it's called fall. And what have you. This the other thing. I'm a little preoccupied for a minute. Give me a second here. Let me get my bearings. So, let's see. What happened this week? Nothing unusual happened this week. Let's see. I watched David Copperfield with John's sister, Kathy. And we watched Jesse Ralph's performance. Of course, Jesse Ralph is John's... It was his grandmother's aunt. And, you know, that's... she was born 1864. She's on Broadway. La-da-da-da-da-da. I've talked about her. I'm going to make her name the biggest thing since sliced bread. I love her. And what else did I do this week? So anyway, I went to the dump because here in Rockport, even though it's a very Tony town, you have to take your trash to the dump, or as some people like to call it, the transfer station. But I like to call it the dump because, you know, that's what it is. And they have a book swap in there. So I, you know, sometimes you can find really interesting things as I have talked about. And, you know, I found a lot of old books in there. I mean, I found books like from, you know, published in 1819 and not really good books. I mean, it was like a book, one of the books I found was like sort of like a Harlequin romance that was written in 1819. It was kind of odd the way it was written. It was kind of, I kept the book because it's just so unusual. It was like, it's not a, something I never heard of. It's a hardcover book. It's just like one of these books that were lost to posterity. I mean, it's probably one of the few surviving copies of this book. You know, this author is nobody, but, you know, I happen to have the book. And, that I know of. I mean, I looked up on Wikipedia and stuff, and I couldn't find the authors listed at all. So it was like just a book, you know, like a paperback novel that you find in the grocery store, which, you know, no one will ever remember, like a Gladys Schmidt novel. So I was at the dump, and I found this 12-volume set of the complete works of Robert Browning. And it was unusual. They were all in good condition. They're hard covers. They were on the smaller side. They weren't like a regular size book. They were, I don't know, 6 or 7 inches tall, maybe. 6 inches tall. And cute as a button. And so I brought that home. And I thought, wow, this is unusual, right? So I look it up on the Antiquarian Book Exchange. I think that's ABE Books. And you know how much a stinking thing's worth? $200. $200. I found $200 at the dump. So if anybody's interested in the complete works of Robert Browning in this particular edition, Durst, I think, is the company, you know, call me, send me a check for $200, and I'll mail it to you. So, like, where do you dump this sort of thing? You know, it's worth $200, but, like, you know, where can I cash it in? How can I cash in? How can I cash in with those books? What else is there? I also found a book of poetry, an American poet who I never heard of before, or at least didn't. Oh, Hearst and Company is the poems. There's James Russell Lowell. He was a poet, writer, activist from the 19th century. And I have a lovely little book of his poems, which looks like it may have been... It doesn't have a publication date. But I would say late 19th century, early 20th century from the book. It's a beautiful, beautiful little book. Now, of course, I read one of those poems today. And let's see what else is there. Well, give me a minute. Give me a minute. I'm going to pause. So, yeah. So, those are the books. So, today I also baked a cake. There's a lot of birthday cakes. A lot of birthdays this month. And I baked a cake for Mia's birthday. And she's going to have two cakes. One for her party where she's going to have 19 friends over. And then there's going to be a another one on Saturday for the family. That's the one I'm going to bake an orange cake for her. And what else is there? Let's see. Cakes. Well, you know, talk about the antithesis of cakes is working out. I really like my new workout schedule. What I'm doing is 3 full body exercises a week. I should talk about this on the bodybuilding section. Maybe next week I'll go into it in more detail. But I really see a lot of improvement, especially in my like shoulders and stuff. It's like I'm working all these body parts more frequently, which I probably should have been, you know, all along. I mean, I was doing the 3-day split, but I was working, you know, doing one, you know, exercises for the legs all in one day. Now, to be truthful, my legs have always responded well since I've started working out. They're my glory. But I've had a harder time with my chest and my shoulders and stuff, and they're really coming along pretty good since I've started this new, you know, workout routine. So I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty happy with the results, let me tell you. So I want to continue with that. And then, you know, we'll see. I've been thinking maybe I ought to do 4 days a week for the gym instead of 3 days a week. Like a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday type of thing. Actually, I can't do that because I have the play. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, it'll have to be 3 days a week until after the play. Because I'm it'll be Thurio in this play called Two Gentlemen of Verona by some guy named Shakespeare. So listen, on that note, on with the show.
Lash! That's Brenda Starr you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you.
Brenda Starr. Hi kids, another Brenda Starr update. So last week we found that Brenda was at the press conference for Tap Fitzpatrick. Everybody left and she stayed behind spying on Tap Fitzpatrick in the privacy of his own home, where he picked up a drink, perhaps a cola, and started crying. And Ulysses, his dog, was there. So Brenda says, "It's because I do this because the truth comes out when no one is looking. It's a fine line between reporting and voyeurism," she says. So while she's looking out there, Tap is in there with the dog, and the dog starts woofing. And he says to Ulysses, "What? Do you hear something, boy?" And then he says, "There's nobody out there, just the candy wrappers from all the reporters. But I'll go check anyway." So Brenda's like, "Oi, oi, oi, I have to get out of here." So she runs away, and Tap Fitzpatrick comes out, and he's like looking around, and Brenda's behind a bush, and she says, "I hope he didn't see me, because all I need is a stalking charge for my career." So at this point, her phone rings, and she's like, "I hope he doesn't hear me either." And who's on the phone but Hank O'Hare? And she's tells Brenda, "Where is that story? Where's the Tap Fitzpatrick story?" And she said, so she says, "I don't have it yet. I'm just getting some more information." "Well, come in here, write something. Come in here, bitch, and write something. What do you need to have something about Tap Fitzpatrick and Felicity Fox?" So she goes back to the newsroom. "I want you to write a 400-word report for this, for the front page, about Tap and Felicity." And she says, "Well, all I have is hunches and rumors." And Hank says, "Go ahead, that's the new age. That doesn't make a difference, just as long as it sells. The internet age, it doesn't make a difference if it's true." Brenda Starr says, "But we can't print hunches and rumors." At which point, Binky Burns, Felicity's producer for her Crime Stoppers show or whatever it is, calls Brenda. "Brenda, I have to talk to you. We have to do it privately." And Brenda says, "Well, where?" And the next panel is in a cemetery. And Brenda Starr thinks to herself, TV people are so melodramatic. So, kids, why did Binky Burns need to talk to Brenda Starr in the cemetery? Why can't Hank O'Hare just wait to get the facts right before releasing a story? Why is Tap Fitzpatrick crying and drinking a cola and talking to his dog Ulysses? Perhaps we'll find out the answers to these questions and more next week.
Je ne vous ferai pas. Oh, vous êtes en paix.
Ne me touchez pas, ne me touchez pas, ou je me jette à l'eau.
Je ne vous touche pas. Voyez, je resterai ici contre l'âme. N'ayez pas peur.
It's easy to forget the origin of things, and one thing which comes to mind is the opera Pelléas et Mélisande, written by Claude Debussy, and I think it was, what year was that? The Pelléas et Mélisande was written in the year, I think it was 1903, it was 1902, first performed in 1902, and it was set to a libretto by Maurice Maeterlinck. And it was my impression that it was always just a libretto. It was written, you know, something written especially for Debussy. And that was, you know, that was that. However, Maeterlinck, it was a play. And then adapted as a libretto for Debussy. And the original play was written in 1893, and it was a pretty interesting sort of groundbreaking play, in that it was a symbolist play, and it went against the grain of realism at the time. The French theater was very much into realism, and in fact, to give the sense that this was an unrealistic, or like a fantasy land, the director put gauze on the stage, hung it between the audience and the actors, and also took off the footlights and changed the lighting. So it was very strange and ethereal and dreamlike. So that was 1893. Critics hated it, but his contemporaries liked it. It was like a new thing. And it also besides Claude Debussy, who, you know, wrote the opera, Gabriel Fauré had written incidental music for the play, which was used for a suite later on. And also Jean Sibelius wrote incidental music for it in 1905. And apparently at the Gasol Gate, that's one of the sections, it's used as the signature music of the BBC program The Sky at Night. Now, this, all you can find all of this at Wikipedia, wikipedia.org, for all of your information needs. And last but not least, I almost burped there, Arnold Schoenberg wrote an early symphonic poem based on the Pelléas et Mélisande, 1902-1903. So there we have Pelléas et Mélisande, French. It's a play. It's an opera. And so I did a little research, and we find that it was premiered. There was actually an American premiere of the drama on Broadway, and that was in 1923, December 4th of 1923. There were 13 performances, and guess who else was in that production? None other than Jessie Ralph, John's famous relative. She was in that production.
Did you ever see so many children? You don't suppose they're all one family? Look, live children. Look at the live children. Why do they call us live children?
I don't know.
Let's go talk. You're live children, aren't you?
Of course we're alive. Aren't you?
Oh no. Not yet. We're waiting to be born. How funny you're dressed.
I was thinking the same about you.
What are those things on your feet?
They're my shoes.
Shoes? What are they for?
And so, what are shoes indeed? Well, that, my friend, is a little clip from the movie The Bluebird, starring Shirley Temple. And that is also a work written by Maurice Maeterlinck. And actually, he's actually better known for that play, The Bluebird, which was written in the, let's see here. Let's look it up. The Bluebird. Maurice Maeterlinck. Works here. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I'm gonna pause. Okay, where was I? Anyway, the American premiere of The Bluebird. I had a phone call from Johnny. The Bluebird premiered in America in 1911, and then there was another revival in 1923. There must have been some sort of festival going on, because there was the, as I mentioned before, there's the Pelléas et Mélisande, which ran for 13 performances. Then they had the Bluebird, which ran longer, 33 performances. And he's actually mostly known for this play. And he won a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm not really sure what he won it for, whether all of his works, or whether it was maybe even The Bluebird. I don't know. But let's go on to talk about The Bluebird a little bit. Now, when I watched this movie, I watched it with Shirley Temple, the Shirley Temple movie. And the reason why is because Jessie Ralph, you can't get away from her, she is in the movie. And she's, you know, she has a fairly small role. She's good, though. And in fact, her best known role is that as Peggotty in David Copperfield. And she has, you know, that's a pretty major, it's an extensive role in the movie, and she's very good. So if you want to know who Jessie Ralph is and want to see John, one of John's relatives, and apparently, according to Kathy, she looks like John's grandmother, is go rent or buy David Copperfield, 1935. What's really interesting is they have starring W.C. Fields, right? And he's in the movie, I think, less time than Peggotty, than Jessie Ralph. And Jessie Ralph is not even, you know, listed as an actor in it. Just the way it was, I guess. But anyway, what was I going to say about the Bluebird? So I was watching the Bluebird, and as you heard from that little clip from the movie, there's this scene where they're in the future and there's unborn children. And that reminded me so much of the Hofmannsthal, is that how you pronounce it, libretto for Die Frau ohne Schatten, The Woman Without a Shadow. That, of course, is a libretto, and the music was written, it was an opera libretto, and the music was written by Richard Strauss. And in that movie, there's unborn children. There's the chorus of unborn children. And it's all about babies, you know, wanting to be born. And so maybe that was something, you know, that people were thinking about that time. You know, this is all written in the, well, Bluebird was written in, what did I say, 1911 or something, or before that, 1908. It premiered in France in 1908, Broadway 1911. And Die Frau ohne Schatten, Die Frau ohne Schatten, I wonder when that was. Where's the Die Frau ohne Schatten? Die Frau, Hugo von Hofmannsthal. And that opera premiered in 1919. And so, you know, he wrote it 20 years after, or 10 years after, The Bluebird. So people were thinking about that, I guess. I guess that was important to have ideas that children were living in clouds. So there you go, honey. There you go, honey.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue. Dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh why can't I?
And that, of course, was from The Wizard of Oz. And did you know, well, they talk about bluebirds in it, but did you know, it's another coincidence, bluebirds, but the thing that ties this together is that originally The Wizard of Oz, the role of Dorothy, was offered to Little Shirley Temple. But you know what? She was not chosen because she could not sing. So because, you know, because she didn't get the role and she was really upset because, you know, it was, I'm not even sure if the Wizard of Oz was a hit when it first came out. But whatever studio Shirley Temple belonged to, which I think was Fox, she demanded, I guess, or somebody wanted to give her a movie just like that because, you know, it was dissing Shirley Temple. You know, that she brought Shirley Temple saw that movie and said, Jesus fuck, I could never do that job that Judy Garland did. Judy Garland shines like the top of the Chrysler Building. This is all part of the gay agenda. Yeah, mm-hmm. Anyway, it started that movie, The Wizard of Oz, it did. Anyway, Shirley Temple, the studio decided to give her The Bluebird, which is sort of a fantasy novel. It's like a, not a novel, it's a fantasy play. It's a dream. She comes back and finds out that the best place is home. You know, just it's the same story as The Wizard of Oz. And in fact, the first 10 minutes of The Bluebird is done in black and white. And then the kids fall asleep and wake up and it's Technicolor for no apparent reason. It's just a horrible movie. The Blue Bird is a terrible, terrible movie. And you could just see they're like trying to like make, trying to do something as good as The Wizard of Oz, and they just can't because they have Shirley Temple. And, you know, Shirley Temple's cute and everything, but she's sort of a one-note Johnny, I think. Don't you think? A one-note Johnny? Anyway, so that's how to add that little section, a little tie it together to tie Jesse Ralph with both Debussy, Judy Garland, well, not really Judy Garland, but at least Shirley Temple.
Do ba 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 da ba da 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 ba da 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 ba da 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 da. I don't know why I made you cry. I'm sorry, sweet heart, and yet, though you shouldn't be lenient with me, I hope you'll forgive and forget. What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I do to prove it to you? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do. I was all wrong, but right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know that I made you cry, and I'm so sorry, dear. So what can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? You made me glad, I made you sad, I made you lonesome and blue. And who ever knew, who'd ever think that I would be crying to you? What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I do to prove it to you? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do. I was all wrong, but right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know that I made you cry, and I'm so sorry, dear. So what can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry?
With a Pressed Flower by James Russell Lull. This little flower from afar hath come from other lands to thine, for once its white and drooping star could see its shadow in the Rhine. Perchance some fair-haired German maid hath plucked one from the self-same stalk, and numbered over, half afraid, its petals in her evening walk. He loves me, loves me not, she cries, he loves me more than earth or heaven, and then glad tears have filled her eyes, to find the number was uneven. So I love, my heart doth wander forth, to farthest lands beyond the sea, and search the fairest spots of earth, to find sweet flowers of thought for thee. A type this tiny blossom is, of what my heart doth every day, seeking for pleasant fantasies to brood upon when thou art away. And thou must count its petals well, because it is a gift from me, and the last one of all shall tell something I've often told to thee. But here at home, where we were born, thou wilt find flowers just as true, down bending every summer morn with freshness of New England dew. For nature, ever right in love, hath given them the same sweet tongue, whether with German skies above, or here our granite rocks among.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Maybe we should get to know each other better.